Join the chorus. It's time for another North Melbourne Footy Club update with Dean Vasek and special guests on Hashtag Kangaroos.
Welcome to another episode. My name is Dean Vasek. You can find me on Twitter at Hashtag Kangas or on Instagram at Hashtag Kangaroos Podcast. So today I was joined by Ricky. I went a bit over with the interview today. I had a lot of questions for him. It started from last week, the media scrutiny. I talked a little bit about the preseason draft, the game against St Kilda last week, and obviously we finished off with a bit of a preview coming up against Gold Coast this week. Now, I did do the interview before the teams were selected tonight, so you won't have the team changes just yet. We did talk about prospective players that might come in and so forth. Anyways, I won't hold you up anymore. I'll get Ricky on right now.
All right, so I'm joined once again by Ricky. So, Ricky, before we get into a bit of a review from last week's game and what's been happening this week, I wanted to go back to last week. Obviously, we were under a lot of media scrutiny, probably the biggest amount of media we copped since pretty much the Wayne Carey affair, I would have thought. We had a lot coming out. Jason Lord Francis going to Adelaide. I guess the biggest news was the three scouts that pretty much left us all at once, all resigned. How did you think the club handled the whole week as far as scrutiny goes?
Oh, was there stuff going on? I thought it was pretty quiet. No?
It was
an interesting week, wasn't it? Left, right, and centre. I think once it gets to that stage where the media sort of smells blood in the water, it really sort of intensifies 10 times because they think, oh, we might be able to get something here. When the initial report was three recruiters resigning on the same day, which ended up being, I mean, I guess you could say it's technically true, but it wasn't like all three of them decided to resign on the same day. There was more to it in terms of who went where and how long it had been building for each individual part of the equation. So there's a bit of mayo on the initial reports.
Yeah, of course.
And then obviously the stuff with Horn Francis again was, I mean, to me it was a bit overblown in terms of, like, you know, it's an 18-year-old just going home and not realizing, because when you're 18, you don't know much in terms of.
No, exactly. I'm 43 and I still don't know much.
Yeah, exactly. I think we're all, depending on the different stages of life, like, we all know sort of the red tape that comes as you get older. But as an 18-year-old in your first year of footy, and you don't know that it's just something little, like you're traveling to state, people have to know, because if a drug tester rolls up to your place and goes, "Hey, random bug test time," and you're not there, well, then you can be in a lot of strife if no one knows where you are, you know, and that sort of stuff. So, I mean, I think, you know, depending on which sort of media headline you looked at, one was cautioned, one was warned, one was, you know, spoken to, whatever. I mean, I think it's more just just remember next time, just let us know when you're going interstate.
Yeah, I think that was as simple as it. Yeah, that was pretty much it. I think they would have just, because he posted on Instagram on Sunday that he was out with his mates. And you wouldn't do that if you're sort of trying to keep it secret. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But also that when you make it, like, you know, when you talk about it in sort of the tone that it deserves, it doesn't, you know, sell papers or get clicks. So you got to, I mean, from their point of view, the media's point of view, you have to put a bit of mayo on it to draw people in. And then you have all the talk shows and whatever, put another bit of mayo on it to get people to listen and get people to watch, and then you get your outrage cycle, and then you have your expert comments, and it's just the same sort of cycle that once you've been around the media for long enough, you can pick each part of it. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. And
you've seen it a million times.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, at the end of the day, there's, you know, when you get three people resign, you know, and like you said, I mean, there was different circumstances for all of them. But when you get them say that they all resigned on the same day, it just kept the news just kept getting bigger and bigger. It started with Ralphie, then, you know, Caroline Wilson chimed in as well, and a number of others. And when you're playing poorly on field as well, it's kind of an easy target, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think I think smaller clubs, not just North, but smaller clubs in general are always easier targets for the media in terms of mainstream sort of headlines and how to sort of craft a cycle, a media cycle of news. If you have, you know, sort of Collingwoods and your, I guess, not that Richmond have any bad news about them these days, but there's more, they have more links in sort of the top end of how to control stories and PR wise and how to massage it so they get out a little better. Whereas with, say, North Melbourne, or I guess St Kilda's been fine, but St Kilda, Bulldogs, those sorts of teams, even Gold Coast, I guess, to a certain extent, they don't have necessarily that power to be able to sort of change the course of a story.
No, of course. I mean, I think the week before was the whole Lulumba sort of Collingwood thing, and then I guess it's just going to the next target, I guess. And obviously Apple on-field performances led to a lot of media scrutiny that week, whereas this week it's dissipated and it's gone on to probably Essendon more so this week.
That's also not to say that North didn't deserve a level of scrutiny. I hope no one sort of interprets it that way. I mean, even though the three recruiters didn't resign at the same time, I mean, it's not, I think I mentioned it a few days ago in passing on Twitter and a little bit in writing, that a functioning workplace doesn't have not necessarily have three recruiters resign within a short period of each other. So I hope no one interprets it as saying, you know, everything's fine, everything's, sunshine and rainbows and lollipops. But I'm just more coming at it from a media angle and how they approach the stories and how they craft a cycle.
Yeah, no, 100%. I couldn't agree more with all that sort of what you've covered there. I mean, I think the one thing that surprised me was when Ben Amafio was fronting the media on a Thursday, he sort of said something along the lines of, what's his name, Finnegan, got offered a three-year deal, and we don't offer long-term contracts. I found that a bit bizarre, because if you want to get, a big recruit, if you want to get a top scout, you're probably going to have to offer it. You'd have to think you'd have to offer a decent contract, wouldn't you? And even when, as far as to say, I don't have a long-term contract and a number of others, we just don't do that. Is that a bit surprising to you?
Yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily mind too much if that's the mindset internally. But I think in terms of, again, going back to sort of that PR and perception and, casting yourself out there in the best image, to make that public doesn't put the club in the best light in terms of being able to attract the best talent. Because, say they go, say they go to, I'm being obviously a bit facetious here, but they go Alistair Clark and go, oh, I want you to coach. And Clark goes, oh, yeah, I want, these three assistants on here on, he says, yes, but as long as I have my three assistants on three-year deals or four-year deals.
Yeah.
Like, are they suddenly going to turn around and go, no? That sort of thing. So I mean, I think it's one of those things. In general, you don't necessarily want to promise things that you can't stick to. And I think that I heard that what he said as well. I just don't think it attracts the caliber of people that you want to when you do have to go shopping to fill roles.
Yeah, that's a pretty fair point. Like, if Alistair Clarkson sort of, if you want to get him as a coach, like, let's say things don't work out with David Noble, which can happen. Alistair Clarkson's not going to say, all right, give me 2 years, and that'll do. He'll want a long-term contract, wouldn't he, with a fair bit of money attached. And you kind of have to, like you said, you pretty much have to honour that, wouldn't you?
Well, that's the thing. And then all of a sudden, with people looking for cheap headlines, and they can turn the narrative around into, not necessarily for Clarko, just for other things, they could offer, players, long-term deals and be like, players are fine and staff. And then it all just has the capability to get very, very messy. I'm not a huge fan of hearing that sort of stuff come out in public, even if it's the mindset internally. It's not ideal, but I think it's one of those things that's best kept internal rather than made public.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that's the comment I was a bit surprised. But look, I expected everything else, the Q&A sort of thing. Everything's fine and dandy. Nothing to see here, basically. Like, I mean, there's, we expected those sorts of answers. They don't have to disclose anything that is that happens inside the club. You know, that whatever happens inside the club stays inside the club. You know, I certainly respect that, and you know, but obviously there's a lot going on as well. Like for three people to resign over a matter of weeks, I know they're all different circumstances, and they did admit that the Glenn Luff one did surprise them. So you know, I mean, there's probably a bit of unrest, and you know, I mean, Mark Finnegan left on a 3-year deal, but there's probably a chance he was probably looking at other opportunities as well. So maybe he wasn't happy. I don't know. That's just me speculating. That's what been in a workplace for a number of years. That's what tends to happen. People look for other jobs while they're in a job, sort of thing. So when they're not happy, so yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it is what it is now. Like with this week, obviously, are you happier it's quieting down the scrutiny, or do you feel like the club still deserve it, particularly after another, you know, comprehensive loss against St Kilda?
Yeah, a comprehensive loss like most, like seven of the last weeks.
Yeah.
That's just how the media cycle goes. I mean, they sort of work themselves up and go hammer and tong for a few days at a time, and then they go, okay, well, they think they've got everything they can get out of that, so they just decide to move on to the next one. And they basically sort of basically get every possible last drip they can and go, to be in my view, over the top a lot of the times, but that's how it is. And then they move on, and then they've gone to Essendon. I mean, Essendon didn't help themselves by announcing the review for the sake of a review, but that's a different story.
The review of the players that they're reviewing all the people that should have been reviewed. So, that was a strange one.
I think it's because, I mean, you look at a show like Footy Classified. I mean, to be honest, wrestling is more real than the opinions they have from week to week. You know, it's all just designed to get a rise out of people.
I think wrestling is real.
It's just possible way. Exactly. When you have that sort of mindset going into it, there's only so much you can get out of one topic before moving on, because it's all confected and the opinions will change on a dime depending on what can get you the most views and the most clicks and the most airtime, really. So I think we're going to talk about on-field stuff later, but I mean, a lot of stuff, the actual problems isn't really sort of the sexy things that can be dressed up in headlines. So it's much easier to say, look, Essendon crisis, they're terrible, rah, 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 because they know that's the easiest way to get most reaction.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I wanted to talk to you about that, Ricky, because you're more diplomatic and you think about these things. So, it's good to get your view on that as well. We'll move forward anyway, outside of the media. We obviously had the mid-season draft last night. We had the one pick, Callan Dawson from Williamstown Football Club, a key position player, a key position back, intercept player, a highly touted intercept player. We've pretty much gone needs-based, you would have to think now, haven't we, as far as the selection there goes. I mean, I don't know if he's the best player that we could have taken at number two. I think the guy that went to Essendon, the Ambrosi, number three, was a lot of talk about him, a rebounding defender. Has it got to that stage now where we kind of have to go a bit needs-based based on that selection?
I mean, I think the mid-season draft is kind of by necessity a little bit that way, unless you have sort of the number one pick. It felt like last year, judging by all the reports and the chatter that Jacob Edwards stand out at one, and this year again, judging off the experts, which I'm definitely not from a draft point of view, that Cully was the same for West Coast, and I think when you look at some of the other types that went. Clearly, North wasn't going to pick up Sam Durden again. So to feel like Dawson was kind of the best fit, if not necessarily the most talented of the guys. I mean, he's one of the short list of players that has an 18-month deal. There was seven or eight of the guys picked that had a 18-month deal, according to Callum Toomey on the AFL website. I think he's still out for 3 or 4 more weeks. He's got rehab to do on an ankle, if I can remember the reports right before he's eligible for selection. But yeah, I mean, but he's definitely the type of player that the North list needs. It's sort of intercepty second tour. I think a lot of reports said he's 194, but then the video that Brady Rawlings had on the North website said he's 196.
Okay.
So okay. 194, 196. Yeah, when he gets to that height, same.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. But he's definitely the right type of player that North needs to fill. Whether he, whether he's able to make an impact when he plays, I guess only time will tell.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to put too much emphasis on the mid-season draft pick. Like I think I talked to you about this last time, that, it's very rare that you get something out of it. I was certainly hoping we do get something out of it. And he did do an interview with the club a couple of hours ago, I think I was listening to, and he sort of said he should be only out for a couple more weeks and he should be right after the bye at this stage. So, we'll... he'll just join the long list of injuries that we have already in the physio room. So
you'll fit right in. He's got half.
You'll get to know a lot of the boys by the looks of it. So
exactly.
Pretty much half the team. So I mean, it is a mature body. I think Brady Rawlings made no mistake. He's pretty much said that at the end of the year we're going to target. Probably two or three players in that 24 to 29 age bracket, where they're probably not getting opportunities out of the clubs. I think we're going to look at that. And he fits that demographic. He's 24, so, mature body. In saying that, were we too quick to, delist players like a DeMont, Attlee, and even a Mason Wood, who was quite good on a weekend, that are in that age demographic? We'd be too quick to delist them, because now we're going to try and get those types of players into the club at the end of the season.
It feels a bit that way sometimes, doesn't it?
I think
if we go through them one by one, I think with Mason, to me, he'd reached not necessarily a bad thing. I just think he'd reached his ceiling at North.
Yeah.
And he wasn't any better at North. Is that a reflection on him or the club and the development? I think it's a bit of both.
Yeah.
He's been there for, 7-8 years by the time he left. And
yeah.
I think, just like anything, when, people in jobs and whatever, sometimes you're in an environment you just can't get any better. And then by all reports, he sort of had a bit of a wake-up call when you went to St Kilda and then realised how much better he needed to get. And credit to him, he sort of put his head down and worked hard and realised that potential in terms of the running and moving up to a wing. That part about him getting a wake-up call at St Kilda probably doesn't reflect overly great on North and the development, but maybe it's just the way it is. Atts is probably, I think it's 50-50. I don't know either way. I mean, at the start of the year, you would have thought there's a lot of experience in the back half, so it kind of makes sense in terms of being able to shield. And then about 8 rounds in, there was no experience in the back half. Apart from
I know. They're all gone.
And you thought, actually, it might have been decent.
Yeah, can we get it back?
But yes, I think that's 50-50. I think it just more depends on personal opinions with that. But DeMont, 100%. 100%. He's the guy that sort of trains well, sets the standards. I mean, you've got to think he came in to the AFL as a relatively one-dimensional inside midfielder.
Yeah.
And to go from that and his sort of aerobic capacity and transforming himself into a winger is that takes a lot of effort. And the work he put in and the way he trained. I mean, you can see he's gone to Port Adelaide as a rookie and once he's been in the team, he hasn't gone out apart from one week he missed against North with COVID. So you can see the way he's already respected and worked his way into that fourth thing on merit. It wasn't as if the North midfield had a bunch of 25-year-old Clayton Oliver and Christian Bataka's sitting there pushing Froggy out of the side. So I think that's definitely one. Definitely a one that was too soon, but I mean, it's good for Froggy that he's gone and extended his career at Port Adelaide. He's still got a lot of good football in him as long as he stays healthy.
Yeah, I mean, he's only 25, 26 at the end of the day. That's pretty much the peak for an AFL footballer. He's been in the system a long time, so that, because 2 years ago he was touted almost as the next captain. He was going that well, so. Yeah, that one, and he played every game last year. It's not like he was, and he never looked like going out of the team. So that one was a bit of a strange one. And I think you've mentioned this a few times. We've got a bit of a hole on the list as far as wingmen go. Jared Pollack, At least he was cited last week next to Ben Cunnington because, I thought maybe, he died or something like that. We haven't seen him in a long time. And,
that's the thing with Frog. I mean, he's one of those guys that can sort of be trusted to sort of maintain standards even when things are fluctuating and changing around him. Like, he had that interrupted start last year with, was it a calf, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. And like you said, once he came in, he didn't miss a game, I think, maybe miss one between when he came back and the rest of the year. And I think even, I would imagine by the looks of it, it sort of ended up being kind of like a Dumont for Greenwood swap with the way in terms of experience. But it looked like that sort of that last injury that Greenwood had at the arm that finished his 2021 early. Looks like he's lost a half a step since then. Doesn't look like the same player so far this year. Maybe it's something that's been around in time, but he's just recently hit his contract trigger for a third year. So he's got about 2.5 years to go. Maybe that third year ends up being a sort of development coaching role or something, who knows. But I think, not to be too harsh on Greenwood, but I think Dumont for Greenwood swap, as it's turned out, has ended up being a slight downgrade, especially with the extra roles that Dumont can play compared to Greenwood.
I couldn't agree more. I looked up Greenwood's statistics last year, and I think a third of his possessions came from centre clearances, basically, or clearances from stoppages. So, like you said, he's pretty much a one-dimensional player, whereas Dumont can, play on a wing, he can play as an inside mid. Like, he probably would, there might have been, that game earlier in the year against Brisbane, where we were short of midfielders, he might have had to play as an inside mid.
If you needed him to, so you can play a wing.
Yeah, that's right.
You can play inside as well, which is a luxury to have. I mean, you look at the way that the North midfield is sort of building slowly at the moment. You don't see a lot of guys in that rotation who can play on ball and wing. It's normally one or the other. Like the wings go to the half forward and the on ballers sort of stay on ball for more or less. Like there's not too many guys that can play wing and on ball well, which Dumont can and could have played a role. He's never going to be the sort of guy who's like fringe All Australian contention or getting 30 every week, but he's a really important role player, which is why he's fit in so well at Port since he got into the side.
100%. And like you said, all the best to him, and I hope he does well over there because he's back home now as well in Adelaide, which is something that was rumoured last year as well, that he did want to go back home. But if we offered him a 2 or 3 year deal, he would have stayed at us. I would have felt confident in that rather than actually wait until the last minute where he actually got rookied in the rookie draft, and that was one of the last picks too. So at least he would have had a certain AFL career as opposed to now, where he's got a 1 year deal at Port Adelaide and has made the most of his opportunities so far. But it might be just a one, gets another year next year and so forth. So we'll see how we go with him anyway. Are you surprised, even last night, that we did make our second selection? We did retire Tom Lynch to get that open second selection. I mean, North Melbourne legend Tom Lynch, I should have mentioned. But, are you surprised that we didn't actually take a punt on anyone there?
I mean, not overly. It's a relatively limited sort of draft pool. Each team would go in with a certain amount of names on the list, and by the end of it, North are looking for a couple of small forwards that got taken before their second pick. And I'd rather them be sort of, I don't know if strict is the right word, but have their list and stick to it and not just take a player for the sake of it. Because, whatever player would have come in at that time would have been on a six-month deal in terms of the small forwards that were left, assuming that's they had their hearts fixated on in terms of type of player. I'd rather not take a player for the sake of it. People might think just have as many hits as you want in terms of getting talent in. But I think if you don't rate the talent that's out there in terms of bringing them onto the list, I think getting someone in just for the sake of it doesn't benefit anyone really.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been a Charlie Hammer last year. I mean, I don't know much about Charlie Hammer. He only played a handful of games, but he got delisted after the 6 months. So, no, he's giving false hope to someone if you don't believe they're going to be there the long term. So, that's a fair call, Ricky. So I'm going to take a square leg and I'm going to put him on a boundary. I'm going to throw a few short ones now. I'm going to talk to you about David Noble. Now, when he did the Q&A, he talked about we're doing quite well in these advanced metrics. What could that possibly be that we're doing well? Because in every advanced statistic I can see, we're pretty much last or second last with West Coast Eagles, contested possessions, uncontested possessions throughout the year and so forth. Is there anything you see that he sees that we're doing well in? Or is that just a deflection?
Well, I mean, to be honest, I don't know what those advanced metrics are. So that comes with the caveat that they have access, all clubs internally have access to a lot of numbers that that we can't see. Like I was lucky enough when I was there at the club and had access to a champion data login that I could see those stats and see what all the stuff that never, ever, ever sees the light of day in media because it costs an arm and a leg. To make public. So like if I use the rough example, the first one that comes to the top of my head, one time I walked past one of our performance people and they were looking at a tackle efficiency stat. So that looks at how teams tackle, the success rate of tackles, you know, are your tackles forcing the ball up? Are they forcing the turnover? Do they not force anything? Things like that, which we have no access to. And then it's like, and then there's things like, how do you exit a stoppage? So you exit with kicks and handballs. Does it go forward? Does it go backwards? Like if you exit a stoppage from the back 50, does it go all the way to the wing? Does it go to an inside 50? Does it translate into a score? How do you defend a stoppage when you lose it? All these sorts of things that I wish I still had access to because
can't hack into the system.
No, I wish.
Can't use your username again. No.
Oh, that'd be nice. yes, all that sort of stuff that they had access to, that we could only dream to have access to. You know, 2% of it. So I would imagine there'd be something in there. But it's so hard to explain to sort of the general public who don't really understand these stats. I mean, a lot of the stats. I mean, I didn't really understand until I got them explained to me by the coaches being like, oh, you know, this means A and that means B. And I'm like, oh, okay. There'd be something internally that we can't see that they'd, I'm pretty confident in that. How important that is, I guess we can only guess because we don't know.
It's pretty, I mean, like you said, I mean, like they are very advanced metrics. If they're not, like, is there any reason why he won't tell us? Like, because it's question. You know, a lot of fans are questioning it. Like, is he talking shit, or is he actually onto something? A lot of people think that he is talking shit. why wouldn't he sort of say like, we're doing well. I don't know. Like you said, maybe doing well at a stoppages or something like that.
It's a good question. It's a good question. my instinct would be that. Not necessarily, this isn't talking about North fans in general, but just talking about the general reception to things that might not necessarily trust the reaction to it. Like if you tell someone something in good faith and then it gets spun into something that it wasn't intended to be, you know, like I could see him, if he talked about sort of, you know, like you said, stoppages or anything, I could quite easily see that being turned around into, you know, a so-called expert comment being like, oh, how does he think this stat's important? And look at this guy. He's all about stats and he's not about this. He's not about that. He's going to talk to players and make him better. So that's where, if I had to guess, that's why what I think he's saying. It's obviously hard to find that balance of wanting people to sort of take the comments at face value that, yes, we're going better in things when, I mean, to 99% of us, we look out in the field and we go, well, actually, things don't look like they're getting better. They look like they're getting worse.
Of course.
So yeah, it's a tricky spot, but that's what I think. Just that sort of worry that whatever he says could get spun out into something that's not. And we all saw what the coverage was like last week. So, I think they might be justified in that one.
That's fair enough. I just want to finish off with that. Do you know have any idea why Champion Data won't make that information public? Like, I'd be happy to pay, $20 for the year or something, to get that sort of stuff. Yeah, what do you have any idea why that is? Did the club or anything when you worked there? Did they tell you anything about that?
As far as I know, it's just a business thing. Just a business from Champion Data's point of view. Clubs play A lot of money.
Oh, right.
We're talking sort of, lots of figures, we'll put it that way.
Right.
But yeah, it's, so I wouldn't, from a business point of view, you know, if you make that public, how much of your business are you losing, all that sort of complicated businessy talk that is way, way above my pay grade. That's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, in an ideal world, we'll be able to see a bit more, if not, you know, the whole suite of things. But it's just a business thing as far as I know.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I get that, I suppose. Yeah, anyways, we'll move forward. You've hit me over the fence for six, so I'll change the tactic again. So we'll go to a little bit of a game review of the Saints game. Now, you tweeted during the game, sort of, it seemed like you were a bit frustrated there.
I thought you tweeted,
Ricky, that saying that we're a broken team. How do you think we played? Like, go through it, because you did write about it on shinbone.com. Just explain how we played, I guess.
Yeah, that wasn't my greatest goal. I should have specified I was specifically talking from and on field how we wanted to play. Because I was frustrated, and you know, when you're frustrated, you lose a bit of context.
Of course.
So that wasn't my greatest tweet of all time.
That's fine.
But yeah, I just the big picture. I mean, the tweet before that I had was about the way the team was setting up to defend, and I just think in today's AFL, every team, almost everything, talks about, you know, forward half game. We want to trap the ball in our forward half. Everything starts from there, because it's so hard to move the ball full ground unless you're playing against, well, to be honest, North or West Coast, basically. And part of the way North is setting up to defend, it's very deep. I mean, for the soccer fans that are listening, it's kind of like you're setting up with a low block and just inviting the pressure on you, and which means that you're naturally going to get less territory. You're going to be outpointed in inside 50s, and then when you do get the ball, you're starting from your back half every single time, more or less. I don't have, again, this is one of those stats that aren't public, but in terms of like the forward half turnovers, as in turnovers you force in your forward half, I mean, I'd imagine North are right there on the bottom in that, by a long way in the non-West Coast division.
They'll be last or second last.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I just don't think the way that North is setting up to defend is what works in 2022. And I would really like to see them push up at the ball carrier. And we saw that on Sunday with Sinclair and Hill. I almost said Jess Sinclair. and Hill. And just the way they were allowed to sort of start everything from half back in the middle when St Kilda gained possession. And I think they had high 60s disposals between them. They both had 30-plus. I mean, it was great for my super coach with Sinclair, but in terms of actually them play, and so it meant every time North got the ball, it's from the back half, and because you're so deep, it's just so hard to move the ball, and then you go into that ball movement part of things, and then because they're so deep, it allows St Kilda, by contrast, to play a forward half game because they're getting it deep, and then they squeeze up, and it's so hard to. So hard to move the ball, and it all starts from how the team is defending. And I'd really like to see them push up a bit. I mean, obviously Collingwood has more top half defensive talent, top end defensive talent than North. But if you look at the way they played in the first few weeks, they were trying to implement that really high press, and sometimes it failed, it looked dreadful. But more often than not, because they knew exactly what they were doing and how they wanted to achieve it, it looked great. And they created more scoring opportunities from that. I mean, no one is claiming Collingwood's forward six is anywhere near the top half of the league in terms of like just flat out talent, but they're creating enough opportunities to score from the way they defend, and that's just not what North is doing at the moment, because the way they're sitting so deep and not pressing up on the ball carrier. So yeah, that was my frustration from Sunday, and it's taken me a few weeks to figure it out. A lot of the times I've been walked away from games thinking, figure out what they're trying to do defensively and what they're trying to achieve with it and what the end goal is. And I mean, this way it does mean you defend your inside 50 slightly better because you have a lot of numbers deep, but you're conceding territory and tempo and control of the game to the opposition. And it's so much harder to move the ball from the back half. So yeah, that was my frustrations from Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bit surprising we just let Bradley Hill do whatever he liked. Look, this time last year, or last year's game, we put Bailey Scott on him that kept him down to 6 touches, really nullified his influence. And we're playing to the St Kilda's strengths by just leaving him loose. I mean, we had a loose man in the back line. Obviously, that's probably a bit of a concern because we're probably concerned about Max King. Go on.
I was going to say, which made sense. That's more what comes as a consequence of that, really.
Of course. And we did a lot of, when we played the uncontested game against Melbourne, it was very different to this week. We would do a 3 or 4 uncontested possessions, get it to the back pocket, and then go long down the line to a 2-on-1, 3-on-2. And then we had no one front square when the ball hit the ground. There was a lot of hit and hope with the football, wasn't there?
Yeah, and I mean, there wasn't necessarily, I mean, if you go back to that Melbourne, there wasn't that trying and orchestrating to get a loose defender, because obviously the Melbourne all fours as a collective don't sort of strike that same fear in you as the St Kilda's, which again, it makes sense. But I mean, I remember a lot of teams, I mean, like for example, when I was at North, the match committee, they used to do a thing called war games where they basically just sit there and every week and they'd spend however long, sometimes it'd be an hour, sometimes it'd be sort of 3 or 4, and they just basically throw out scenarios to each other. Like, what happens if we do A? Well, then if we do A, then, you know, that means B and C need to be fixed. Or if we do, what happens if the other team does D? Well, that means we'll have a chance to do E and F, you know? And the part that frustrates me is, yes, they've decided to, you know, put a loose in and defend against King and defend against either Marshall or Ryder, depending on who was resting forward at the time, but then not taking into account the consequence of that is that everything ahead of the ball, across halfback, across the middle, needs to be absolutely spot on. Otherwise, you're just basically having defensive practice for 120 minutes. You can't score enough. And with just sort of winning, you know, an outrageous amount of clearances and clean clearances, which is different to just sort of smacking it on the boot out of there.
Yeah, 100%. Do you think with those tactics, we're almost going for a bit of an honourable loss, like trying not to get smashed, which was another 50-point loss on the weekend? Do you think it's almost like, let's just try and minimise the damage a little bit? Is that where we're at?
I don't know. I think the generous interpretation would be that this is sort of your sort of working on an 18-man defensive block, and you're starting low on the field, and then push higher and higher as you get more in tune with the demands. I've heard that a couple of people said that, and I don't understand that angle. I mean, to me, it's not really what I think, because when you start defending low, as in so close to your own goal, your defensive goal, it completely changes the actions you have to take. Whereas if you start high, that's more in tune with how footy works these days, to be honest. I mean, I think, like you said, though, it's sort of the best case scenario from the way they're defending, the way they defended on Sunday, is an honourable loss.
I guess that's what I was going for. It's just the way we sort of set up was.
There's no way you can hit a winning score that way. And you look at the inside 50s, and they're just not creating turnovers because you're inviting all the pressure on.
That's right.
This isn't prime, you know, Jose Mourinho sort of sitting there and setting up a side to hit on the counter. Like, it's it doesn't work that way all the time in footy, that's for sure. Not in 2022 anyway.
No, that's right. No, I assume that's probably the first and last time we'll hear Jose Mourinho get mentioned in my podcast, but honourable mention to him. So, yeah, another special one. We'll go forward anyway. We've probably delved deep enough into the Secura game. There's still probably a couple of hours till the teams come out as we're recording. What players might come in, do you think, this week? I think, is Ben McKay back?
I believe. There's catch and go depending on whether he got through training. So,
yeah.
This is interesting. I could get this right and look like a genius to when people listen into the rest of the time, or I could get it completely wrong. but I would imagine if he gets through training, he'd be good to go. And I think he'd probably come in for Hayden, given Hayden's the one that's been sort of tasked with that responsibility of playing on the taller guys. He played on memory on the weekend, and he sort of go back to that Mackay and Walker core trio. And then, I mean, obviously Zerha's out, so, I mean, seems like Stevenson's the logical in for him. So, who knows what else we get. But I think those are the two logical ones. Thankfully, it's a Saturday game, so we can see the 22 as it is tonight and not have to wait till tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly right. I want to talk to you about Hugh Greenwood. We talked about him a little bit before. I think there's only one role for him. And, you know, last week there was only 26, he only attended 26% of centre bounces. Now, he only had seven touches last week playing as a half forward, predominantly in the game. Is that role right for him? I don't think it is. Like, I think he's only a centre clearance player, pretty much a midfielder. I don't think he can play anywhere else, can he?
Not at this stage of his career, based on what we've seen this year in terms of the way he moves and what he has been able to do with and without the ball. He just looks a half step slower. I think I've written it a couple of times across the last sort of few months or a year. It's like you never know what injury is going to be the tipping point for how until your body can't respond the way it used to. Like you look at someone like Will Walker, he showed those glimpses, and then had in what turned out to be his last game, had a really good quarter and a half, got injured again, and then and that was a tipping point. After that, he could never get close to being back in the AFL side. I just think ever since Greenwood's games this year, after what finished his year last year, just around contests and the way he's been able to move from contest to contest hasn't been what we've seen from him in previous years at Gold Coast and even at Adelaide, to be honest. I just think it's got to be on ball or nothing. But then there's a lot of guys in there that are playing better on ball than him. So who knows?
Also, one other player I want to touch on is Tristan Sherry. Do you think he's in a bit of trouble to lose his spot this week? There's expected to be a lot of rain, which means we can go smaller and we could almost even play Larky as a second ruck as a relief for Todd Goldstein. He's had four touches in the last 2 weeks and hasn't been. And Todd Goldstein's taken over as the number one ruckman with Tristan Sherry pretty much a clear number two. Is he in danger of losing his spot this week?
I feel like he'll be selected.
Yeah,
it'll be one of those ones where if they get there at TIO on Saturday and they look up and they see the skies and go,
which is likely.
I think he's potentially the one to make way late. I think it's going to be a purely conditions based for him. Whether he stays in or out. I mean that's the thing. I mean, who knows what would have happened the week that he got injured? I mean. Who knows what would have happened with that team? Like maybe Coleman Jones would have come in for Goldie. You don't know. That stage that things weren't working. But then, injury, sliding doors, and realized Goldie had to play ruck 100% because locked to play ruck. So, it's sliding doors. Can't really do much. Can't do much without Coleman obviously available for the next. Yeah. Well, he's out for 6 weeks and add another two on that. So maybe he'll come back for a couple of games right at the back end. So, I think he'll be named. And then it just depends on whether he plays.
That's pretty much, I think, what will happen, to be honest with you. I mean, it looks like there's going to be a bit of rain, so he might be a late out. I'm not too sure based on that. At the end of the... I mean, we'll talk about it probably later in the year when it's... when he's up for a contract, whether they keep him or not, or whether they go with Todd Goldstein for another year. But that's, that'll play its course over the coming weeks as to, which direction they might go for next year. I want to talk to you about the Gold Coast Suns as well. Now, I've seen a little bit of them. I've been impressed with what I've seen with them over the last few weeks. Who are some of the players we have to watch out for?
I'm actually really interested in terms of what they've done a lot of things right this year. And I think if they had King if they had King Bear in the side and not sort of obviously going recovering from a knee injury, I reckon they'd be a top eight side right now.
Yeah, I agree.
They, so they basically, I mean, we saw last year they were very high. Because 2 years ago they were a lot of pressure, really sort of simple stuff, but high pressure. Last year they sort of reverted to a really high uncontested possession game and it just didn't suit them. So this year they've sort of basically by design got rid of the uncontested possession. I think the uncontested differential, they are the second last or third last this year off the top of my head. So that's by design as opposed to not being able to defend it. So they take a lot of territory with the way they play and giving the forward lines kind of a motley crew of forwards. I got Caswell and Chole and then sort of a bunch of smalls rolling around here. Some might be ranking some weeks who gets here, or might Jeffrey kick five a couple of weeks ago, or Ainsworth dropped up every so often. So, yeah, I mean, they're doing a lot of things right in the way they defend. I mean, it's a shame that Rory Thomas got injured again because he played a couple and he looked good. And you've still got Collins back there, who's one of the more underrated key defenders in the league. So I think they're just, after the last sort of few years, they've, at the moment, they're just a good, slightly under average, if that makes sense. Like, they're, like that's their ceiling while they miss King. And I think the conditions will suit them on Saturday, especially considering they've had longer to acclimatise and they've played last week there and spent the whole week up there. So, they've improved to just a sort of solid side, which is a big step forward for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's good for them because, that's a big improvement. Judging by the history, to be honest with you, to be a solid team and pushing for a top eight spot, come this year because they've got a decent draw as well going the rest of the way. They've got to play us twice, and judging by that, that's for 2 weeks, you'd have to think. So you think the conditions would suit them more than us on the weekend, on Saturday?
I think I think so. Before we get into all the other aspects, just purely because they're more familiar with it. Like Hawthorn got up there last Saturday and tried it, and it took them sort of 2.5 quarters to get used to it. A night game slightly different to Twilight, obviously, that North will play there on Saturday, but Gold Coast has jumped them because they knew exactly how to play the ground, how to play the conditions. It's basically like a wet weather game. Maybe all the rain here in Melbourne during the week helps with that.
Yeah.
In terms of being able to train in the wet and train in the greasy style conditions. And basically because they're not a high uncontested possession team, I think the wet suits them because it's a territory game. So you just get the ball forward, lock it in. Like it's not really a complicated style of footy when it's wet.
No.
They beat Frio 3 weeks ago in the wet doing the same sort of thing, really. So, I just think the way they play will suit conditions on Saturday.
I'll probably agree with that. Yeah, they were quite good against Fremantle a few weeks ago, like you said, in the wet conditions. So, yeah, it probably does suit them. They know the ground a lot better than we do. So, it's going to be probably another tough battle. Do you think there's any chance we could play a team that's not in form?
Yeah, we've got the Giants next week, so they've also
improved. They've got the new coach, so they want to perform for him. So
the buy-in, like, 2.5 weeks time, maybe that'll be a good opportunity to play something that's not in good form, huh?
The witch's hats or something, the training. Yeah.
And then news of an injury will come out during the buy.
Something happened.
It's a bit that way, isn't it? It feels like every week North play against a team that's playing well, but just 2022, right?
No, that's the way it goes, unfortunately. We haven't helped ourselves, but other teams are just seem to strike good form when they come into play. So that's the way it goes. Just one more one. How do we get Nick Larkey involved in the game if he's struggling like last week? And he's had games like this before, and it's not his fault. The way we've been playing has probably, made it really, really tough for him. To be generous. I mean, 2 touches last week. He didn't get his first touch till the third quarter. Can we get him involved in some other way, like get him in the ruck or just throw him loose in the back line to get a few cheap touches?
Depending on conditions, like we're just talking about, it might end up being a case where he's kind of forced into a bit of relief ruck work if they end up, if Sherry ends up being dropped because it's raining. Obviously, Goldie can't ruck 100% of the ruck contest. So, Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing him do a few sort of Ford 50 or maybe Ford 70 because the ball doesn't go inside 50. Ford half right contest.
Yeah.
I think this week, given Jared Witts is such a good ruckman and probably the form ruckman in the competition, like,
you
might have to pick your spots a bit with him. But yeah, I mean, I'd like to see him do or get involved in a few more ruck contests. I think that's the way to go. Not centre bounce stuff, but just more your around the ground stuff. So you don't have to worry about sort of the bang bang collision stuff, knee on knee, that type of thing, because obviously it's cool. Important to go down that way. But just some swap work, forward half ruck stoppages, I think it could be the way to go. Because I don't think you can throw him behind the ball because then there's nothing in front of the ball. So,
well, he might get a lot of possessions because the ball might be played in that half of the ground. So
That's true. Yeah, we just have nothing to sort of nothing to kick to. So unless they not do something really radical and sort of go with that sort of smaller midfielder size second ruckman, or maybe Greenwood plays some snap ruck minutes as a resting ruck. But yeah. To me, I think the way to get him involved is just to get him in a few sort of forward half around the ground stoppages.
Yeah, no, that's it's probably not a way of putting it. So I'll finish off. You've been very generous with your time here, Ricky. I think we mentioned half an hour, and now it's been almost an hour. I do apologise for that. What's a final prediction then? You expect to win?
I think Gold Coast by a few goals. To me, regardless of conditions, regardless of who's in, who's out, I just want to see how the team sets up to defend. Because, I know Noble mentioned in his press conference post-match, he was talking about the inability to create forward half turnovers. And, to me, the answer is pretty obvious. So I want to see how they set up to defend and whether there's any sort of improvement and sort of a step higher up the field. Maybe it results in a couple of ugly looking goals and that sort of Gold Coast walk in from the line, but from a long-term point of view, I just want to see some improvement in that, and the margin's kind of secondary.
We kind of have to rely on the margin being secondary. we've got to look through a microscope to get those little improvements. And like you said, just little things that matter. And hopefully we do. Tactically, hopefully we do improve this week as far as tactics go, and we can, and probably, it will lead to a more competitive performance. So hopefully the wet will help us as far as margin goes as well. So, because it
brings the sides close together.
Yeah, what's that? Sorry,
brings the sides close together.
that's what we're hoping. So, if we get another 10 goal loss in a wet and we've only kicked two goals for the game or something like that, it'll be a bit disheartening. So, we'll see what happens. Anyways, Ricky, did you want to plug the shinboner.com once again?
Yeah, shinboner.com. Actually, best time to sign up now, second of the month. So you basically get a free month. And as far as I know, you can cancel on the 31st if you want, 30th if you want, and don't have to pay anything. So, shinboner.com, plenty of stuff's coming up. List management page is getting all sort of redone with all the mid-season draft picks, contract statuses, out-of-contract guys and a graphic. And potentially some depth charts coming soon for teams as well. So that's exciting work in progress.
Oh, sounds good, Ricky. No, definitely sign up and don't be a tight ass and you get to the 30th. No, I'll cancel it now and stuff like that. Because you don't want to do that. Cancel it then the second of the month. I'll sign up again or something like that. So through the missus email account. So, but definitely get behind it. You support one of your own. There's different tiers as well. So obviously, the higher you go, the better it is, the more access you get to other things. So definitely get beyond Ricky's work and you'll become smarter for it, won't you, Ricky?
That's the plan. If people are getting dumber, then I've failed. So hopefully you'll get smarter.
No, I've definitely become smarter. And it's always good to get, after a game, it's always good to, read your article and get a second set of eyes on it and just get a bit more in-depth on where it all went wrong. Because sometimes you can, be a bit emotional. Straight after a game, your focus is a bit narrow and you're sort of just, just thinking, oh, we're shit and what's this shit and all that sort of thing. So, whereas this way you can sort of get a bit more, logical a logical response. And Ricky does a lot of in-depth work with it. So yeah, definitely check it out. And you can check out other teams on there as well. He does a lot of work with that. So yeah, definitely get behind it. Anyways, Ricky, I think I've kept you on long enough, probably half an hour more than I think we planned. So yeah, I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Always fun having a chat.
So thanks to Ricky for coming on the show once again. Like I said, he was very generous with his time. I did project that it would probably only be a half an hour interview, but we went well over that. But I do enjoy chatting to Ricky. So, yeah, no, it was good to get his perspective on how things are going and, yeah, where things are hopefully going to go for the club in the future. I probably did have another 100 questions for him, but I'll try to keep it as short as I can, but sometimes it just goes a bit over, and I'm sure all you listeners love listening to Ricky as well, and definitely check out his work at theshinboner.com. He gave it a good plug, so yeah, definitely look at doing that as soon as you can. He does have a number of Patreon subscribers. At the end of the day, I think the most expensive platform he's got is the $10 platform. I mean, you can get cheaper ones, $2.50, $5, $7.50. You can check that all out on his website and sign up to whichever one you want. And at the end of the day, you're supporting one of your own as well. Ricky does have a good in-depth knowledge, and he's a passionate North Melbourne supporter. So he doesn't just talk about North Melbourne. He talks about other things, other games as well. Like, he will do match reviews coming up this week, and he's got a lot of stuff coming up next week as well on his and the coming weeks on his webpage. So definitely check out Ricky's work. Also, thanks to all your likes, retweets you do for the show, it really helps out. Yeah, like I stated previously, the downloads are getting higher and higher each week, which is great. I've got all you lovely listeners to thank for that as well. So I really appreciate all the lovely things you are doing to get this show going forward. But that's it for this week. I hope you all you lovely listeners have a great weekend. Hopefully we can put in a much more competitive performance this week, not get flogged. It will be tough. Gold Coast have been very good the last few weeks, and they've got a playing with a tremendous amount of confidence at the moment. They've knocked off some decent scalps as well. Yeah, they've they knocked off Fremantle just a few weeks ago in the wet. So, yeah, no, good on them for that. Anyways, that's it. I've had enough. I've talked long enough. I've pretty much kept you lovely listeners on for about an hour. Don't forget, you can always put it to times 1.5 speed to get through the podcast a little quicker if you can't listen to it all at once for an hour. So, yeah, you can always do that trick. I generally do that when I listen to podcasts. So, yeah, that's it. I'm done. So I will leave a shout-out today to Shannon Watt. Bye for now.